So we're back, episode number 25. And Zach, whenever you're in a lot of distress and you need help, who do you call?
I call my friends at Law Chevrolet.
Yeah, you call the law.
The good people.
Yeah, so a quick message here from our good friend Dylan at Law Chevrolet, and we'll get into episode number 25.
Hey guys, it's Dylan here at Law Chevrolet Buick. Man, what an amazing year it was. 2018 was truly awesome. The support that we had from our drag racing community was tremendous. Whether it was coming and purchasing a vehicle from us or sending somebody in that you knew or even making sure that you got your service work done here. Guys, we truly appreciate that. With that being said, we're going to continue what we did in 2018. If you're part of our drag racing community and you come and purchase a vehicle from us, we're going to give you $600 on a Visa gift card. It can be used for whatever you want it to be used for. If you're like me, that's some buyback money. So like I said, we appreciate everything you guys have done for us in 2018. Let's make 2019 a great year again. Make sure to give me a call here at 812-897-2220 or just visit LawChevy.com. We'd be glad to take care of you guys. Thank you.
Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
All right, here we go. Episode 25 dialed in. Man, I am excited about this one, Jake. This is something I've been looking forward to thinking about ever since that we decided to start this podcast. We got an awesome guest for you today. Peter Biondo, the Terminator himself, a 52-time national event winner in NHRA Sportsman Competition. That puts him fifth on the all-time list, a seven-time world champion. Peter Biondo, how you doing, man? Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. I appreciate the invite.
Hey, you didn't make many friends last weekend at Tucson, but you got us, buddy. So give us a rundown of how you got to where you are today. You know, you have a beautiful wife, beautiful family, and that's kind of taken the front seat lately. But Peter Biondo of years past is he came out this past weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had a really cool, really fun weekend. So you want me to start with this weekend or you want, because I can go way back. I'm 47 years old. This could take a while.
Well, we got nothing but time, and I think it's definitely, you know, worthy to, you know, to have this conversation about. Just kind of tell people that don't know your story where you started out and how you got to where you are today.
Cool. Very cool. Well, you know, when you're young, you know, there's a lot of different sports you can play and a lot of different directions you can go. But in my case, it was pretty much a no-brainer. And when you hear about our living arrangements and where the practice tree was, mm-hmm. you'll, and this is before the time the practice tree was invented. It was actually a 2x4s on my father's desk. So we were in a small apartment I grew up in and was born in right outside of New York City. And the reason I bring that up is my brother, my father, and I shared a bedroom, actually all the way up until I was 18 years old. That was just how the family worked out. In the bedroom was also my father's office. In the corner was his desk. And on his desk, he had a practice tree built by 2x4s and just screw-in bug lights that his buddy made for him. Wooden gas pedal. And, I mean, it was something you saw as soon as you woke up in the morning, and it's something you saw as soon as you went to bed. So, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, my brother and I were competitive, and we would pretty much gravitated deeply towards the sport from that moment. From that, we went to Englishtown, was our local track. My father was always on a very strict budget, so we would use the grocery getter station wagon. We would tow his 69 Firebird to the track. We'd unhook it. Thing would be about 250 degrees. Drive it to the stage lane. So the first run was always like 2/10 slower than the second run. But we made it work, and that's how we got started.
So by 2x4s and bug lights. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's on my shopping list. We're good to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, technology has advanced quite a bit, so you can do a little better than that, Jake, now by just getting something turnkey to practice with. But yeah, back then there was nothing. That was it. And my father was a little ahead of his time and knew the importance of practicing without wearing his car out. And that's pretty much where it all started, in a little bedroom with all three of us. And on his desk was a bunch of 2x4 pieces of wood and bug lights for sure.
So I've listened to your conversation with Luke Bogacki on the Elite Forum That's the one I probably referenced the most. It's like a 40-minute conversation where Luke talked to you for the elite members, and I actually just listened to it over the weekend before we started racing Friday. And you kind of talk about in there a little bit about this kind of finding the zone or your concentration at the getting it to the highest level. Can you describe maybe your process? I mean, I know if you don't want to give too much away, but if there is there something, you know, that kind of puts you in the moment, in the zone, that helps you perform to the highest level, as we've seen you time and time again, you know, your strings of 00 lights and dead on. I mean, is how do you rise to the occasion?
Well, I think a lot of it starts with preparation before you get to the starting line, which builds confidence, and years of hitting the practice tree, as we just spoke about, that also builds confidence. So by the time you get to, by the time I get to the line, I have a lot of confidence, and that helps out a lot. But to, you know, what two things that I've learned that have helped me the most, and one was from my father and one was from my brother. The first one from my father, and I can remember this since I was 12 years old and just getting ready to race, and he always preached to be aggressive. Aside from the zone question that you're talking about, being aggressive was always and always is and hopefully always will be something I stand upon. And you know, I'm not afraid to go red, not afraid of losing. You know, just race like you're at a test session, race with no fear. That's always been something my father preached to me, and it's always been embedded in my mind. Now, as far as the zone goes, the one thing that stands out that my brother told me, and this goes back 25 years, and now I know it's been also something that Kenny Underwood talks about, but well before Kenny Underwood, my brother was preaching this to me, and it was, you know, you're at the track for 4 days. Why can't you get yourself in the zone for 60 seconds? Do whatever it takes, you know, shut everything else out. And I have a couple of things that help me do that. But whenever I find myself lost or a little bit kind of maybe just not focused or in that sniper mode that I like to call it, and I roll into the burnout box, I have to say that to myself once in a while. Yo, man, Pete, you're here for 60 seconds over a 4 day period. There's no excuses here. And then I just take a deep breath. And one of the things that's a trigger to me, I always tell people use triggers. Some of my friends say, how do you do it? One of the triggers to me is as soon as I back up from my burnout, if I'm in my Dragster and I knock the shifter into low gear, that's my trigger. Race on. Right from then on, it's me and that bulb. So that's pretty much my story on that.
Yeah, and that's something that I noticed the very first time I've ever really spectated watching you racing is not necessarily your zone. Not necessarily.
Is that my well, now you know, do you hear the New York City bounce?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
hey, that's not even worth cutting out. That's perfect. But not necessarily your zone, but you're probably the most disciplined driver that I've ever seen, and that not just that, you know, you roll up in the staging lanes and, you know, you're not talking to anybody, but you can get out and have a full conversation with somebody, but you're disciplined. Like the moment you put your helmet on, you pull the shifter the same way, you roll the same amount of roll out through the burnout and stop and start your burnout. The little things like that are incredible, and the attention to detail that you give to that. So that's I think that's probably an experience thing as well as a discipline thing also, but you know, that's probably what impressed me the most the first time I ever actually paid attention to you bracket racing and not just watch you turn on wind lights.
Well, I appreciate that. And a lot of it's just about execution at the point of execution. I think most of us, if not all of us, have that in us. It's just a matter of pulling it out of ourselves. And I have a way of pulling it out of myself. You know, I constantly take myself very seriously when I'm at the racetrack. Like I'm not there just to socialize. And, you know, sometimes I might come off the wrong way because I'm kind of quiet. But, you know, I'm very focused on I'm very in tune throughout the day. If I'm not racing, if they're running the buyback round and I just won first round and they're running the rebuy round, in the back of my mind, I'm listening to the speakers. I'm listening to the trends. You know, what's the track doing? You know, I'm constantly in tune with the conditions, even though it doesn't seem like I am. So I'm very, you know, I'm not at the level of focus like I am on a starting line, but I am in tune with what's going on. And I think that also helps.
So how competitive would you say that you are?
I'm not a Cracker Barrel for lunch while the buyback round going on. I'm kind of listening in tune to, you know, what the track's doing. And cause I know I'm going to be off the track for a couple hours and get an idea of what pattern's going on with the racetrack, but go ahead, Jake.
So how competitive would you say that you are nowadays, and what exactly drives you to that level of greatness? Why do you still compete on as high of a level as you do? How have you been able to keep that up?
Well, I probably am more competitive than I ever was because I don't get as many shots at it. So if you don't get as many swings at the bat, you want to make every swing count, right? And with me, that's the way it's been lately. I started a family. We started a Fall Flings 10 years ago now. Also have a family business that my father started 30 years ago that I'm still involved with, and then started a family. So you combine all those three, and that doesn't give me too many swings at the bats when it comes to getting to the plate. So now, to answer your question, when I do get to the plate, I'm as competitive as I ever was, or more so, because I have less shots at it, and I want to make a count. And, you know, everybody says, you know, seat time. And I couldn't agree more. But there's a point where you have enough seat time where you have to have the drive and you have to have the will to win. And if I go to racing too much right now with all the stuff I have going on, my winning percentage will go down. And the last 4 years has probably been my highest, not the most wins I've ever had for sure, because I'm racing a lot less, but my winning percentage is probably the highest it's ever been. And I've been racing the least just because I've been, you know, making sure every at-bat counts.
And on that same topic, if you were running the national event and the points series like you were, you know, 10 years ago, do you think it'd still have the same outcome? Do you think you'd be an 11, 12, 13-time world champion?
Well, I take off a few years here and there with that. And so my pattern has been, to answer your question, no. If I didn't have a family, I could say yes, I can still go after it hard. If I didn't have the Spring Flings combined in my business, I'd say yes. But that can be possible. Maybe my championships would rack up a little bit more. But the way it is now, I would say no. I just have too much going on. If I feel like I don't have the right mindset and I have too much going on, I'm just going to pick and choose my races and not chase a championship. And that's what I've done. I took a few years off. Everything's kind of jumbled together a little bit at this point, but in the mid 2000s up until like the early to mid 2000s, I hit it pretty hard on a national event scene. And then I started getting worn out and involved with other things and businesses and whatnot and life. And I would take 2 years off, get refreshed, get recharged, go after it again. Take 2 or 3 years off, get refreshed, get recharged, go after it again. And that happened again in 2011. And then I took 2 more years off and got recharged. And in 2014, I went after it again and won it. It doesn't always happen like that, the way you draw it up. But to me, that's what works for me. I rather take 2 or 3 years off and be 100% in than be 5 years over in a row at, you know, 50 to 70% in.
So Jake, before I go to my next question, I want to follow up that one as well. So I listened to a lot of different podcasts, Peter. I was listening to Joe Rogan, actually. He had Dr. Phil on. I had a lot of time on my hands this weekend. I was driving to Darlington and back for the SFG race. So anyways, they talked about, actually, Dr. Phil, and I would recommend this episode to everybody to listen to. It's a lot of good nuggets of knowledge in there. He was talking about Tony. He had interviewed Tony Romo and asked him, you know, what kind of drove him to get from small college in Illinois. He went to like Eastern Illinois, this small little school, and ended up making it the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Like, what drove him to be great? And he said, in his mind, he was so competitive that he couldn't sleep. He couldn't stand it to get beat and have somebody out there think that they were better than him. And that's how he described going over, like, for example, a route that in practice worked perfect between him and the receiver. But on game day on Sunday, it got intercepted and he would go mm-hmm. over and over that. And why? So I was just wondering if you can relate to that as far as like how you approach a loss, you know, or how you approach, you know, your competitive edge. Is that similar to something that you experience, or is that totally different?
Yeah, I'd say I could see some similarities. I mean, we're probably separated by a couple of $100 million, me and Tom.
Right.
But aside from that.
Now he's made himself, on top of that, he's turned, I mean, not that the Dallas ever won many playoff games, but he was definitely a respectable player. And now he's turned himself in one of the best, probably the best color analyst for NFL football. And he attributed that as well, you know, not just in football as success, but even now as an analyst to be great. He's just competitive in his personality.
Yep, I couldn't agree more with that. He's excellent as an as a broadcaster. And yeah, absolutely. So I could see a lot of similarities there. I was so in the late 90s, I was dominating at Englishtown Raceway Park, and I was doing really very well. And my competitive nature, I wanted to take it to the next level. You know, what was the next level? It was either go to the national event scene or go to some big buck bracket races. So Anthony Bertozzi, well-known racer and great guy, without even knowing me.
Hell of a chef.
Couldn't get a better one. And called me up and said, without even knowing me, and said, hey, pack your suitcase. I got a car for you at the 5-day. So I wanted to get on a bigger stage, got on a bigger stage there. And with that, I started going to national events. And, you know, I wanted to challenge myself and continue to put myself to the test on a bigger and bigger stages. So, yeah, I would say whenever I think the people that know me best, I mean, I definitely make many mistakes, that's for sure. But I try to put no matter if it's the spring fling, I don't get involved in anything or any race, whether I'm the promoter or the guy wearing a helmet, unless I feel like I'm ready for it and I can give 100% to it. And I think Tony Romo and some of the guys like Kyle talks about Tom Brady a lot. I think they're the same way. Like, you don't bite off more than you can chew. Just do every, but when you're ready to do something, do it 110%. Mm-hmm. That's definitely my personality for sure. Mm-hmm. And to case in point, one passion I have, and I've talked to Luke about this in the past, is doing racing schools. I think, you know, if I could start my, you know, I grew up in Queens, New York, right outside of New York City. I went to St. John's University, and could have very easily. You would have very easily thought I would have went into the finance, you know, maybe stock market, but I ended up in drag racing. And with that, I would have liked to do schools. I did one school with Luke, and I did one school of my own, and I never had probably the most fun I ever had, quote unquote, working. And I still get a lot of people ask me, could you teach me? Could you do a school for us at New Media? Could you do school for us at Maple Grove, what have you? And I turn them down because I sent them over to Luke because he is the best in the business without a doubt when it comes to that. And I don't, but my point is I don't have the time to do it. So I'm not going to do it 60, 70, 50%. I'll send them over to a guy that could do it 100% like Luke.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So kind of switching different subject here, as far as all the different classes that you've raised. And by the way, like I remember like growing up when I was racing junior dragsters and starting to drive super pro, you know, we always got the national dragster every other week. You were in there in some class. I would look for your results and look, okay, well, how did Biondo make it through this time? Because it just seemed like if you were in one of the classes at a national event, you were getting the Wally, you know, one way or the other. So as far as all those classes that you won in, what is your favorite class to compete in and why?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, that's a hard one.
So, we ask the hard-hitting questions here on Dodge.
Yeah, and, I like it.
And you can say Superstock before Justin Lamb was a thing.
Yeah, Superstock. Yeah, exactly. Before he took over the world. So I would say if I had to pick just one, it would have to be, you know, my 69 Camaro running stock. That was, you know, you're shifting gears, you're foot braking, you're popping wheelies and, mm-hmm. you know, just a lot more going on in there. It makes for a lot more fun. That would probably be my, the most fun, followed by a close second, which I don't get to do as much. I only got to do a couple of times. Top Sportsman's a heck of a fun class to drive. Fast door car bracket race, I think, is a lot of fun too. But to answer your question, I would say, I have a lot of stories in each class that can, that can go on for a while, and that were a lot of fun in their own ways. But I would say stock, just for the fact that I'm doing more in the car, and you know, like I said, wheel stand shifting, all that good stuff.
Well, since your Camaro and your stock is your favorite, give us a story about it. If you've got stories for days on them, let's hear it. Give us your favorite story about running stock.
Well, I could give you. I'll tell you one story that. Was probably my favorite weekend running stock, and there isn't even a close second to this. I was at Englishtown national event. I'm gonna say, like I said, time flies by, so probably 7 or 8 years ago now, maybe 9. And so my father, who raised us, he single-handedly raised us, 3 young kids, and he didn't really have much time to race or travel. So he would race locally, but he wasn't noticed too much. He was because he had to stay close to home to raise his kids. So he never got a chance to race a national event. So fast forward couple of decades, and going to probably around 2007, I watched my father win in the Englishtown National event. He's only entered about 5 national events, and keep in mind he was about 74 years old at this point and could hit the bottom bowl. I'd put him on the bottom bowl against at that point against anybody, and he was 74. Pretty amazing. And I watched him win Superstock in front of me, and you know, tears filling up my eyes at a home track, and I won stock right behind him. That was probably my favorite stock win, for sure, without a doubt.
So you had a pretty interesting final round in Tucson with quite a bit of drama. And is that the probably the strangest way you've ever won a race?
It still doesn't, Jake, it still doesn't even feel like a win. I mean, so for sure, it is the strangest way I won a race. But Tucson was a lot of fun. I'll hit on that answer first. But the whole weekend was a blast for many reasons. But yeah, so for those that weren't watching Bank Shift or your listeners that don't know, it was a $10,000 no box, I guess we call it, pro shootout. I got to the final round, and I went red, dialed 622. My opponent was dialed 610. And the reason I say that is you'll know we were close in dial, and I went red the whole way down, sixth dial red, and I was pretty hard on myself. I don't show it on the outside, but my inside I'm pretty hard on myself when I make a mistake, and I felt like I was set up for a 10 to 15 light, and I was foot braking and just hit it early. So the whole way down a quarter mile, I'm beating myself up. On top of insult to injury, I'm just kind of looking around, where is this guy? When you go red, you guys are racers. When you go red, you're hoping a guy puts up a good lap. At least he's right next to you. And
98 total.
Yeah. This guy was nowhere to be found. So all right, now I'm making a turn off the end of the track. Great. I went red in the final round, and not only did I go red, but the guy's nowhere to be found. He probably dropped his rear end or his tranny on the starting line on top of it. I'm thinking. So I'm still beating myself up. Time slip Prince. I see him sixth hour red. I see he's whatever. They stopped the clock. So, you can cross the finish line, 60, whatever it was. I get back to my pit and I hear Nate Hershey. This is at least 15 minutes after of beating myself up, by the way. I get back to the pit by myself and I'm like, where's Kyle? Where's Justin? In my mind, no one's around. All right. No one wants to be around a loser, I guess. If I won, they'd be jumping all over me. So as soon as I open the door of my car, I hear Nate Hershey announce the official results for the final are in. And Peter Biondo is the winner because his opponent left his gas cap off and spun out and crossed the center line. Almost hit me, too, by the way. That's why I mentioned the dial-ins. But yeah, oof. craziest. That's never happened to me in all the years I've raced, nevertheless, in the final round.
Your wife didn't, I'm sure she wasn't mad about it.
No, she got some more shopping money. Justin Lamb wasn't mad about it. But, as a competitor, the way I am, I still feel like I didn't. I took the win with a smile. Don't get me wrong, guys. But as a competitor, I still feel like I didn't do my job. So it definitely didn't feel nearly like a win as the earlier in the day when I won a few hours earlier when I won in the Cobalt. It was a much different feeling rolling into the winner's circle.
So, Peter, we talked, I know, before we got on air officially about Englishtown and how that was the first track I remember going to as a kid. We lived in New Jersey for a little while. So what's your opinion on, Raceway Park not in operation right now?
Yeah, that's
kind of sad.
Very, very sad. You hit it on the head. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of upset people, and, you can make a lot of cases against mm-hmm. and for a closing. Most people are against it. I mean, heck, you got the biggest market, you got the New York City market to draw from. You have, it's not too close, not too far from Philly. But with that said, I take a little bit of a different approach in defending the Knapp family because they've stuck with that a lot longer than I think a lot of other families would. Their bracket program was very weak for whatever reason. Towards the end, towards the beginning it wasn't, but towards the end the bracket program was very weak. And they had a plot of land that was worth a lot of money. And, you know, I'm not about the money when it comes to all of this stuff. We realize it's a sport we're all passionate about, but it was a family that I think a lot of other families may have sold out 10 years previous. Let's put it that way. So I do defend in that family for giving us a track for a long period of time. But ultimately, it, you know, it's really, really sad for sure. It's where we cut our teeth. It's where we made all of our memories, and it's gone.
Yeah, it is sad. Definitely a lot of history there. I mean, and I remember, if I'm remembering this correctly from a long time ago as a kid, but they had the walls they had built there to try to reflect the sound because, you know, it was so close to residential area that then the townspeople were battling them. You know, what that's probably been 30 years ago now over the sound of the racetrack. So sad to see it go. And, you know, I would hope that someday it's going to open back up, and just hate the fact that, you know, there's not the Summer Nationals like they used to be at Englishtown. So with that, I guess that kind of leads in pretty well to my next question as far as talking about, you know, maybe the bracket program at the local track there being weak, or maybe that's the case in other places. I mean, what's Peter Biondo's view on the current state of bracket racing from both the racer's point of view and on the promoter side as well?
Yeah, well, it's definitely a good time to be a bracket racer for sure. I mean, maybe the best time ever. I've the purses that are being thrown out there by not just us, by other promoters is you guys really have your pick of the litter when it comes to going to, you know, when should I get into my truck and head to a race. So it's a great time to be a bracket racer. A little bit scary because some of the small tracks aren't getting the support at the same time. They're closing down. So that scares me because that's where it all starts. I mean, that's where I started in the grocery get a station wagon. That's where just about everybody started. So that is a little bit scary. But what you do see now is guys starting out at, you know, I was 17 years old going 16 seconds in the grocery getter. You guys got like Corey Galletti, you know, a whole new generation that are very young, that probably pretty close to that same age. And starting out in dragster. So they're just kind of skipping that whole step. So that might keep it going. And it might not be as bad as doomsday as we're making it sound, as I'm making it sound, as far as the future. But I am a little bit worried about it, because at the local level, it is weak.
So on the promoter side, when wearing the promoter hat, you know, whenever I went and worked behind the scenes at some of these events, you know, there was a lot of things that I said, I never thought of that way, or I never thought that would affect so-and-so this way just by making one decision. So what was the biggest thing you learned becoming a promoter as against being a racer?
The biggest thing I've learned is, I would say consistency. You have to make every decision. You have to just be consistent with every decision you make. I mean, and we could talk to a blue in the face about, you know, it's all about the racer, it's all about this, it's all about that. But when push comes to shove and there's a tough decision to make, you have to use logic, common sense, and be consistent. And Kyle and I, my partner Kyle Seipel and I, we, whenever it is, and believe me, there's more that goes on behind the scenes than you could ever imagine. Jake, you probably know, as far as just having to make a big decision and something that you didn't expect to just to happen. Kyle and I always go right into a room by ourselves and we talk for 5 minutes about it. And it's all about being consistent, though, and treating every racer the same, regardless of the situation.
Yeah, and that's consistency. You're exactly right. Your events have a ton of moving parts, and, you know, guys like Nate Hershey and you and Kyle and everybody that keeps it going, and your wives, I mean, they are saints for having to put up with you guys during that stuff. But, you know, that, you're right, and I think that's why the Fling brand has sold out in 3 minutes for for the fall Fling. And you roll on the gate, and people can predict what decisions you're going to make about what comes up, because they've known what you've done in the past, and they know that you're not going to fly off the handle emotionally and say, this is what we're doing now, because that, you're exactly right. They want consistency, and they want to know what they're signing up for, and they want to know what's going to happen when they pull on the gate every single time.
Absolutely. And you know, it's sometimes we're in a little bit of a hard spot, because, you know, we try to treat people like family. These are racers. These are our customers now, but they're also our friends we've been racing with for 2 decades. So when they come to the tower and we have to tell them something they don't want to hear, and they're one of your friends for 20 years, you know, that's hard. But but you have to do it. And that's what I think, that's what's earned. I think we've earned a lot of respect for that reason. Even when some of our good friends have to walk out of the tower and say, oh, no rerun on that. That is what it was. You know, it's I think that's earned some respect, but it's hard because we are racers. I mean, we started this business in 2010. Just the reason we started it was January. I can remember it like it was yesterday. We went on a ski trip with our wives, and out of the blue, we just said, you know what, where are we going to go this year? Let's start racing together. We don't race each other. We don't race with each other very often. And we were looking at a schedule, and there was nothing that excited us anymore. And this is 2010, right before I would say the boom just was the beginning with promoters. The 5-day Moroso, you guys are probably a little bit young, but the 5-day Moroso that was it, man. That was the bomb. And the 5-day Moroso was gone. And then we wanted to bring that feeling back, not just that was gone. There was nothing that was taking its place. And we said, you know what, let's as two racers, what would we want when we roll in the gate? And we just started drawing stuff on pieces of scrap paper. And I'm telling you guys, we had 15 at least pieces of scrap paper or notes. And the next day we just kept chiseling it down. Okay, well, that's wrong. That's right. That's wrong. That's right. I won't like that. I like this. And we put our heads together and we eventually conquered what we wanted. That was our goal, is to try to build something like the old Moroso. Also 5-day. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool story. But I'll tell you one thing. It was, now that I look back on it, I mean, we guaranteed 320 grand races in 2010 and I can tell you, when we started, we were just racers. Now we understand the business. At that point, we knew nothing about the business except just logic and just making common sense decisions. So, and we only had 3 months to promote it. So needless to say, our first year was a big, I call it, it was a financial failure, and we almost quit while we were taking the banners down. Kyle looked at me and I said, I never worked so hard in my life to have this feeling that we were a failure. We lost money, and I don't know if people had fun or not. And then little by little, people were calling us, you know, you got to try it one more time. It was great. Try it one more time. So we did. And then 10 years later, we're at our 10th anniversary.
It's like the free candy van.
Yeah.
I guess the ski trip that turned into a business meeting is, it's really grown to sprout the best series in bracket race. Kind of the one fling that I went to, I was out third round every day until we went to the 32 car door car shootout, and I went home with like $1,500 worth of stuff. And I thought, this isn't so bad. You know, I've never lost so much in my life and took away so much stuff to go home with. So I guess if there's anything I could take away from my fling experiences, I'm a really good loser.
Well, there's going to be a lot more losers than winners at any race, regardless of what race it is. So you have to, and our mindset is to keep everybody engaged, work really hard behind the scenes, surround ourselves with a bunch of great staff that by the time we get to the race, we're a well-oiled machine. And that's our goal. And we try to do that as best we can.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you remember or not, but the very first main event day that you had True Start, in fact, the very first round, the very first pair, I was a thou red and my guy was 3 thou red, and it worked out like it was supposed to with True Start.
That was you. You know, I remember that, but I didn't remember it. With all due respect, I didn't remember that was you, Jake.
It was me and I think Bill Humphreys is his name, a red Camaro.
You know what's crazy? That was Bristol?
Yep.
Okay.
It's the last spring fling in Bristol.
Wow. What's even crazier? That was the second event we had True Start. The first event we had True Start was Vegas, but that was the first Bristol event we had True Start.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
You were the first pair, so it was cool. But in Vegas, the very first pair, same exact thing happened, which is pretty nuts.
I don't know what the odds of that are, but yeah, it's pretty astronomical.
Yeah.
So what is in store? Can you give us any insight? You know, I guess I understand if things aren't committed yet for future flings that we may see in 2020 and beyond. Are we looking at more purses, more races such as like a million or 500K in the works?
Well, our minds, I'm sure you guys may have followed some of the stuff that went on last week as far as when we opened up pre-entries. Mm-hmm. for the fall fling 500K, and you know, we were totally blown away by it. You know, a lot of people would say, well, you knew it was going to be a quick sellout. Heck no. $1,850 for an entry fee just for the one event and for the 500K event, so you're looking at, if a guy ends up racing all the whole weekend, it's 2,500. I didn't expect it to be a quick sellout. I mean, you know, we went from a 690 entry fee to an 2000 entry fee in that area. So I didn't expect it to be that quick of a sellout. So now it's a quick sellout. Obviously, the market wants more of us. We have a really high demand. But that's when my personality comes back in, where I tell you that I'm not going to do anything unless I can do it 100%. So we've had a lot of opportunities to expand to more races. I don't think we're going to do it for 2020. We'd be foolish not to do it at some point, but I'm really slow to do that. Right now, I'd say for 2020, there's a very good chance we're only going to be at three races again. We're going to, this way we could focus on making them all as good as they can be. And after that, maybe there could be a fourth at some point when the timing's right. But what are we going to do purse-wise? And I don't think we're going to veer too far from our business model. But I could tell you that the sellout, as quick as it sold out, and the demand for our product, even at the higher entry fee, has got me blown away right now. And our minds are definitely still thinking about that.
I understand your hesitance of announcing future plans.
Right.
Well, the only plans I know right now for sure, is that we're going to have three races in 2019. And most, I'd say 90% chance is only three races. Did I say two or three? There's going to be three in 19, the same three in 19, and then three in 20. I don't think we're going to make any big changes. There was some stuff thrown out there. Why don't you guys can truly pull off a true million where you pay guarantee a million. I don't know, man. To say I'm going to do that, if I continue to do that, I do want to do that some point. I'll let that out of the bag. I would like to be the first to do that, and I think we could pull it off. But when you do a high price entry fee and a high like that, it prices out a lot of the people that you started with, and so I kind of watch that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely relate. I mean, I can say from my point of view, I wish I could have got into both 500 races this year. I'm into the 500 SFG. I was paying into, couldn't afford to do both pre-entries at the same time, and that's that financial decision that every racer comes down to. Turns out I should have done it because I was getting ready to pay off my $500K entry in credit that I didn't know I was going to get. So I actually could have afforded it. But anyway, yeah. The demand, wow. I mean, it just shows you that right now big money bracket racing is booming. Business is good. You guys obviously have a great product that the racers have come to expect, going to one of the Fling events that, they're treated like better than they are almost anywhere else or as good. You guys always have consistently delivered. So my hat's off to you and the crew on creating an outstanding brand.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's like any other business. We just put our heads, our minds to it. We just put our heads to it. And I think just like any other business, if you work hard enough at it, it can lead to a lot of demand. But so let me walk you back a little bit through our week. From our standpoint, so we like Kyle and myself and Emily like to be together when the pre-entries open, because as you guys can imagine, a lot goes on. We have to watch a lot of things. We have to, our phones are going off the hook, although we always feel like we have every I's dotted and T's crossed. You never know what's going to come up. So we fly out to California. It starts out with Emily and I's flight getting canceled because of New York snow. So Emily and I sleep on the airport floor from 2:30 a.m. to 5 a.m. and wake up, go to get on the first flight, wake up, go to California. We're all pumped up. So talk about highs and lows. We're all pumped up now. It's about to open. This is gonna really show us where our demand is and what people think about us. Are they gonna fork up the 1850 and want to get into this, or is this thing gonna be stale and maybe 150 people and just stops? So those are the things going through our mind. So it opens up. We have our website guy on the line. I mean, we had every base covered we thought we had. Well, as you guys know, in 2.5 minutes, not only did it sell out, but it oversold big time. And that was now we're sitting there with well over 500 and people's names on a list and racers' names on a list, and that got a confirmation. So at that point, and that's not our business model. Our business model is to all about our experience. You know, it's the Vegas race is a different animal. The Vegas race, they can park 1,000 rigs out there. It's all on pavement. Typically, you have sunshine in Vegas. You have a progressive purse. So if there are more racers, yeah, they hang around. They'll wait around more, but they're going to get paid more. So it kind of goes together to a point. But our East Coast races, we want the number to be around 385. And the last three events we've had with the pre-entries worked perfectly. But so here we are. We don't know whether to laugh or cry. We're just like I was more just blown away, and I didn't know where to turn, like what to do. So we sat there and talked it out, and we decided, you know, a lot of different directions we could have taken. We could have taken all the entries and said, you know what, we'll just pay more, you know, and it will be even bigger. And my ego was telling me that, you know, my ego was saying, all right, we could pay more. And, you know, when else are we going to get this opportunity? We'll pay a lot and the races will be happy. They'll be racing for a lot. But then I said, no, that's not us. We're about the experience. What people like about our flings is they know what to expect, and we're going to get done at a reasonable hour. I think there was only, a matter of fact, once or twice out of 16 or 17 events now that we ran past midnight. So I wanted to keep consistent with that. So we decided, we looked at all the double entries, and this was not the fun part. We had to call each and every double entry and tell them the news. Our decision was that you guys can all come, but you can only race one car. So that was a painstaking couple of hours. I took a third, Kyle took a third, and Emily took a third, and we just started dialing.
So would you attribute a lot of that success of the quick sellouts and what have you, would you contribute a lot of that just to the rarity? Not an understand your event is second to none, but the rarity, say I won the spring fling this year, or I won the fall fling this year, not I won, you know, this race, but you know, 30 other people did this year also. You know, you have what, 12 main event winners all year long?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's 12 of the baddest dudes anywhere. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, why it sells so quick.
Yes, I'd agree with you, Jake. You know, it makes it more of a select product, so to speak. You know, you could, like, I think it was Ivy Hutto, Mr. Ivy Hutto, explained to me, said, you know, it's like going to a steakhouse that you could only get a couple of times a year. You know, if you did 10 of them, you know, that steak might not taste so good because it kind of gets, you know, monotonous after a while.
I meant. So we can take your promoter hat and throw it to the side for a little bit, because we're going to get back to the racing, Peter Biondo.
I have more fun racing, so I'm good with that.
As a driver, I know you don't really get to plan a whole lot, but what events do you look forward to hitting every year?
Oh, well, lately it's really off the cuff. I just, I have a 4-year-old son and a 1-year-old daughter. So by the time we get through to preparing for all the flings, we just play it month by month. I don't go to too many national events anymore. As a matter of fact, I've only gone to a handful in the last 3 years. It all depends. I would like to go to Randy's Million. I would like to go to that race this year. I say that all the time, but I only get there once every 3 years just because of life. But that's one race that I would like to go to. And, you know, everything else is just about timing and priorities. If I see a race pop up and I can make it based on what's going on at home and what our business is and stuff, then I'll go for it. But I don't see myself, just like the last couple of years, you'll probably see me at, unfortunately, you'll probably only see me at maybe one national event this year and probably maybe 3 big buck bracket races at the most. But in the meantime, I'm having a lot of fun on the grassroots side of things, because New Media Dragway is 2.5 hours from New York City, and they run a great program up there. Granted, it's, you know, we're not talking about $100,000 payout, but they guarantee good money. And it's a family, really family based atmosphere, where I bring my wife and my two kids and we have a good time with the Domino family up there. So I will go up there, usually go up there once a month at least. And that's where we have our fun. I fulfill my passion.
And you know, the 150s look like actually a really cool event last year. I'm not sure if they're bringing it back next year or this year, I guess. But that from the outside, it looked like an awesome race to attend.
Absolutely. And I think they are bringing it back, Jake, and it's going to be even better this year. They did a great job the first year. They had not a very good weather forecast, but they showed they would pay the full purse even without the full car count. And I think that's going to go a long way for them this year.
What was it you were driving there last year?
I have my father's 69 Firebird.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Peter Biondo. And that was, I never had ever seen, I thought they had the tech card wrong, but.
Yep. And a quick story on that is my father brought, and Philip Monteith got that off the showroom floor in 69. And he's done very well with it over the years, but now he's he's older now and he's not racing anymore. And he was about to sell it. And I said, he had it on Racing Junk. And I said, I called him up. You got to be kidding me. You're not selling this. And I took it over and brought it to the chassis shop against his will, took the Pontiac out and put a small block Chevy in. And that was definitely against his will. But, you know, I needed to make it competitive and where parts were a little more easily found if something was to go wrong. And yeah, I raced that. And hopefully I can get that to a couple of big buck bracket races because I feel like it's not only sentimentally important to me, but it's also becoming pretty competitive. So, yeah, I ran that, and then Emily ran my dragster. And I can tell you guys, I have never seen, I mean, guy or girl, whatever. I've never seen someone have their mind on raising kids in this matter, not even thinking about racing, and then hop in a race car and perform like she performed. I'm not just saying that because she's my wife. She got down to 6 cars in a 20, and the only reason she lost is because the car sped up on her, and Kyle and I basically misdialed her and told her she was only holding 1 and she was holding 3. So we have a lot of fun up there, and she'll be racing that again, and she is something special, I tell you. She hops in a car and just amazes me with no seat time at all.
Yeah, and that's what I thought they had. No offense to Emily whatsoever, but I thought they had the tech cards mixed up because I figured you'd be in your dragster, especially after the success you had it as of late. But and later found out that was actually Emily, and that was a very impressive performance by her. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, the dragster is definitely the better weapon out of the two that I have. I mean, I think my dragster is as good as any. Not taking anything away from door cars because there's some door cars that are as good as my dragster, but in my camp, my dragster is the better weapon, but she doesn't get a chance to race at all. And, she does everything for our family and for a lot for the Spring Fling. So she'll be in it again this year at that race. And she'll probably surprise us again. She doesn't seem to do it every time. I mean, can I tell you guys, this would be a pretty good story. It'll only take probably 60 seconds, but this is a really good one based on Emily. So she wants to try Super Gas. This was 2011 before we had kids. We're driving. So I said, all right, well, so we go. She's never driven a door car before. She's having a hard time doing a burnout. The whole way down, we're in a minivan driving. I'm trying to Google, YouTube, I should say, how to do a burnout. Like, and I'm going through the motions with my hand on my feet, and I'm saying, okay, here's how you hold the throttle. All right, let the line lock button go and drive it out. So now this is a 170 mile an hour super gas car, and she's never driven a super gas car before this. We're at a national event. I mean, crazy. I figure it's just going to be fun. So first pass, she's having a hard time with the burnout.
Was this at Bristol?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. So first pass, I mean, had a really hard time with the burnout. Couldn't get, in her mind, she thought she was hitting the tire. She was hitting the gas too much and it was rolling through. But in the meantime, she wasn't getting up on a tire. She wasn't giving it enough throttle. So after 2 attempts and the guy in the other lane pre-staged already, she's still in a water box. I said, and there was no 3-step in the car, which I probably in hindsight should have had one when you hear the next line. So I leaned in the car and I said, babe, just, you know, put it to the wood shifter and go. And so she does a pro stock burnout. I'm not kidding you guys. All the way out to 100. So I'm over there apologizing to the starter. I'm apologizing to the guy in the lane. Just 1 second, starter, this won't happen again. You know, that was the first pass. She goes decent run, whatever. Her last run, for whatever reason, she's 30 red and like 994. And didn't know if it popped the wheels. I didn't know what happened. Just run didn't make sense at all. But pretty sure maybe with her lighter weight and the aluminum block and everything, she popped the wheels right out. So I bolt some weight to the front. She's running David Tatum first round, coming off a horrible last time run. And David Tatum's the man when it comes to super gas. So I text Kyle. I said, because he likes to be involved, I said, she got Tatum. He's all about the percentages, all about, you know, this percent. I said, what's the chances? And Emily's going to hear this, but it's the truth. He goes, 30% she beats him. So sure enough, she beats Tatum and wins the whole race. And the first time I was sitting in the car in the final, she ran Marvin Benoit, the guy who used to own Quick Fuel. Yep. And she's 002 and takes 009 at the, no, yeah, 002 takes 009 at the stripe and wins the race. So the first time I met her and I saw her do it, I was like, all right, that's once. Second time, third time, fourth time, no, it's no fluke. She's really good.
Yeah. And that's, that's just a testament, you know, just a last name Biondo, whether it's Peter, Sal, Emily, it doesn't really matter. But speaking of the last name, you took over or have been taking over Biondo Racing Products for, I think your father started it, right?
Yes, my father started it 30 years ago out of a one-car small Queens garage. I remember I was kind of at the crossroads there. I would come home from high school, come home from college, and it was either get involved with that or go to New York City and try to find a job. And little by little, I started packing practice tree boxes, helping them pack UPS delay boxes. So out of that one car garage, 30 years later, yeah, my father's older now, and actually he had a stroke about a year ago. He's hanging in there though, but he's not involved in the business anymore. But my brother's heavily involved, and we have some other good people that are involved, and I'm still involved in it. So yeah, 30 years later, and we bought a building in Queens, and we're running it out of there. Yeah.
And how hard is it for you to try to juggle being there for the company and promoting and being a father and a husband and everything at the same time? What kind of tell us about how that struggle is actually, because it's rough. It's got to be rough.
Yeah. And it is. And at 47 years old, to have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old is kind of rough in itself. To have the energy to keep up with these little rascals. But when you combine that with everything else, it makes for really tiring days, but it's all worth it. And I have a great wife and a wonderful family, and I've stepped back from the Biondo Racing Products part and a little bit. And my brother has stepped up, and we've also hired a new guy who's really good. So they're filling my shoes some there, so I can do more of my spring fling and for my family. it's really tough. It really is. These are days where I'm telling you, like, for instance, my buddy just asked me, do you want to go to the St. John's game tomorrow night? You know, the Big East tournament. And I said, yeah, I haven't been out in a while. That would be great. And he told me it started at 9:30. I'm like, oh man, I turned into a pumpkin at 10 o'clock.
I brought up the Biondo Racing question because I actually called and talked to your brother last week. I had friend of mine looking for a shifter, and I called, and you know, you'll understand real quickly what kind of mood he was in. I said, "Hey, what do you sell in 3-speed shifters?" And he said, "Yeah, we don't." I was like, "Okay, who makes them?" He's like, "I don't know." I was like, "All right, well, have a good day. I'll Google it." And yeah, I know you guys are busy, but if that's not your brother, I don't know what is.
Yeah, you might have talked to my brother-in-law, who married to my sister. He's usually the first one to answer the phone, or it could have been my brother. But yeah, it's been since my father had the stroke, and we've been trying to, and lately the last 3 months, I've been so, with Kyle's, my partner Kyle Seipel's sickness, I've been so focused on the flings that it's definitely put a lot more pressure on the people on the Beyond the Racing side. So yeah, and three-speed shifters aren't really too popular, Jake. So where are you going with that?
I actually had a friend of mine looking because his dad's made him shift by hand for so many years now, and he wants to go electric shift. And I said, well, if there's a shifter on the market, you know, that's the one you want if Biondo makes it, but you don't make it. So I guess he had to go the precision route and wait for 8 weeks.
Yeah, the 3-speed isn't as popular for sure. But to answer your question, it's tough. You know, life isn't always, what do they say? Life isn't always a bowl of cherries. It's you got to just keep grinding at it. And right now the family business is definitely important. But my family and raising them and the spring flings, those two have really taken over a lot of my time and are my passion.
So as far as from the NHRA side, from a sportsman point of view, you know, we mentioned where you sit all time right now at the beginning of the show. Do you have any plans in the future, or is it open to the possibility of running for any more NHRA titles in your career?
Yeah, man. I mean, absolutely. I know right now I keep saying I don't think I'll be running too many events in general, but this is in my blood. And mm-hmm. when I'm at the racetrack, I mean, this past weekend, it's definitely I'm in tune to it. It's in my blood, and I'll definitely be back for sure. It's just a matter of when I could have the time to put 100% into it, because I just don't want to be there just to be there. I want to be there to win.
So, and we went back to where I was talking about your discipline. Have you ever had a weekend like you did in Darlington in 2017 where you've literally won everything but the final round? That weekend, you know, you kept, like you said, you kept stepping up to the plate, and your batting average was incredible, and you had to go run one of your good friends in a huge final round, and you were in the zone, because I looked down and they were tearing your race car apart, and you're like, I'll sit here, I'll just hang out in here. You know that.
Yep.
I bet the house and lost a lot of the house, but you know, it's that was a weekend that was incredibly impressive for you not to get the big check any of those days.
Yeah, usually I like to pride myself. If I get to the final, my pencil's pretty sharp, and I'm hopefully going to finish the deal. You know, 3 out of 4 times, I would hope.
Yeah, you did not lay down junk at all. It didn't. It wasn't like you came up 30. You know, it was great laps in the final that just didn't happen.
Yeah, and I could replay that in my head. Jake and Zach and I would not do anything different in that final. I was racing Chris Reynolds. We sat for, I don't know, probably 45 minutes. And the track was pretty cold. It was, I think, like maybe 58 degrees out. It was close to midnight. And my whole plan was, I mean, the whole night, it was 8th mile. My car was deadly, and I was on a tree. I was holding about anywhere from 14 to 18 thousandths. But that run after the track was sitting so long, I said, you know what, I'm going to, if I can get there, I'm going to hit the tree. I'm going to get there by as little as I can, even if it means not being able to scrub off that 15 thousandths that I'm holding because with the track sitting. But Jimmy Bradshaw did, you know, who I think is one of the better track preppers there, if that's the right term, you know, kept the track good. And sure enough, I'm going 15 thou under when I break out, and they're both 00 on a tree. So I wouldn't change anything about that. But yeah, that getting two runners up in a row, well, like that hurts. But the one that hurt the most, probably if you were going to ask me what was your worst, you know, what was the weekend where you felt like you got kicked in the stomach, it would be I was in Georgia going for 2 world championships, last points race of the season. I have to win, far-fetched, I had to win both of them to win a world championship in stock and super stock. Now, granted, like I said, it's far-fetched to have to win both classes or just win one class. I mean, it's not like you have to win 3 rounds. You have to win the whole event. So, but that was it. I counted up the points, and I said, let's go. If I win in the world championship, world champion in both, I get to the final round of both stock and super stock. All right, talk about getting kicked. I mean, this is probably the worst feeling I've ever had at a racetrack. Go up in stock first. I have to run Brad Ploid. You know, and, you know, much respect for Brad. Knew it wasn't going to be an easy round. We're even on a tree. Get down there and was holding some, and just was one of those deals where, man, I'm holding, but I don't know if I have enough room to get rid of what I'm holding, so I better snug this up as best I can. Give it back less than 1,000, 0.0003. I'm like dead on 7. He's like dead on 6. We had the same reaction time. That was the first one. So one world champion down just like that. All right, Pete, regroup. You still can win the world championship in this one in Superstock. Go out 5 minutes later, no joke, Superstock. Let the button go. We're almost heads up, if I remember. I think I was spotting him like a 10th. I just about left with him. I'm 0.21. He's like 0.78. And all right, I'm already seeing, you know, all right, got this one, right? All of a sudden, my car takes off from underneath me. The freeze out plug blew out and I spun out. So I had to run. So within well, I'm not going to say 5 minutes, but within 8 minutes, I went from maybe 2 world championships to none. So I finished 2nd in the world that year in both categories. That was probably the worst feeling I've ever had at a racetrack. As a matter of fact, Emily was there and she's never seen me so down and out, but it happens.
I mean, you think about that. I mean, what are the odds of anybody even getting to that position to have that happen. You know, to be in the position to win both classes is a rarity for anybody. So, I mean, just to look at that from your point of view as, you know, you're being so close, but at the same time, how many people, you know, would and how would they feel about the opportunity to finish second, to say they were runner up in both classes in the same year is definitely an impressive, probably a much should deserve a lot more credit for sure for getting that far.
Yeah, it was. But I think, and that's a good, great point. It's you know, this, it's an emotional sport. It's we're passionate about it. But when something like that happens, man, holy moly! I mean, you could have taken Mike Tyson and punched me in the face as hard as you can twice, and it probably wouldn't have hurt that much.
So, give me your favorite phrase in bracket racing.
Oh, there's so many new ones. Guys like you and Jed coming up with new ones. I have to say the one that sticks out the most is, and it's kind of older now, but when Jed first said this, when he said, what does he say? Hide the butter knife. And I'm not doing it justice because the way he says it, but when a guy takes like a train load and then breaks out by 2,000 and the other guy's like 50 and four above, and he says hide the butter knife, I think that's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah. Him and JJ are pretty good at those little phrases. So I was told a story about you at Maple Grove in high school.
Oh, you're not gonna did you know oh boy. Okay.
Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit? Because I heard
I don't think I have a choice.
Of students around, and you're the reason none of us can stand on the starting line anymore.
Yep. I was afraid you might bring this up, Jake. So,
hey, we started this. You said you can ask me anything. I'm an open book.
I did. All right. So now to set the stage a little bit, realize it's a high school challenge. It was a Maple Grove. Everybody had to write their high school on their back window, and I was the only one from New York and from this high school, and everybody else was from Jersey or Pennsylvania, and 90% of them were from Pennsylvania high schools. There was over 450 cars, so my father, who taught me, I'd say, everything I know, watches the first time run session. I go, I think I was 17. I go 020, well, back then, 520 something on the tree, and he's watching everybody, and he comes back and goes, you know, Pete, you're deep staged. You're 525. I know you could probably do that, you know, and be right around there, but there's no reason to be. Let's play the odds here. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to deep stage. I want you to back up one bump and just make it a 540, and just you'll be fine with that. Just hit your same spot. So, okay, 9 rounds later, I'm doing it great, right? Now remember, the stands right now at this point, it's like all Pennsylvania kids. And, you know, at that age, you know, in high school, they pick on you. They're not afraid to say. They're not afraid to scream and say what they want to say, say what's on their mind. And here I am, Catholic school boy from New York City. So you can imagine how, you know, the stands, there was the only two people rooting for me at the track were my brother and my father. The stands were packed. So I staged for the semifinals. I thought it was a final, but now I bring back the semifinals. I put the light out, you know, deep stage, back up to one bump, and I think you could kind of see where I'm going with this. And I was nervous. It was one of my first big time chances to make it into the winner's circle at what I thought was a big event, because that event brought you to the bracket finals. So anyway, I forgot to put it back in drive. So last amber comes on, I deck it. The grocery get a station wagon just takes off, spinning the tires backwards. That was absolutely the most. You want to talk about what do they call that? Walk of shame. You want to talk about coming down the return road with what was being said to me on people laughing at me at 16 or whatever, 15 years old that I was. Oh my goodness, that was horrible.
but you know, that's a great story. And you know, at that age, if you would have said, hey, you know, this is going to be minute in the career you're about to have, you know, I think it would have been a little bit easier. But, you know, that's
after that, that Jake, the first... I was ready to quit.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, that was a tough one. Yeah, but I will tell you this, to add to it, the guy was one something against me. And this is my competitive nature coming out. Never took my foot off the gas. Neutral drop, bam, right into drive. All in one motion, I caught the guy and beat him. but they told me that, I mean, he had such a horrible package that. And that's just, you know, even more to the story. But they announced right away, which is the right rule, that you can't, your first motion has to be forward, obviously.
Yeah, man, I think they got you on a technicality there. I think if you just start out in reverse, you don't hit anything, and you catch a dude to beat him, that guy deserves to lose. I mean, don't you think you should? That's hilarious.
That's a hide the sharp objects run.
yeah, exactly. But you know what? I'm glad I stuck with it. That 4 years later, I ran my buddy's Grand National. 3 years later, because I think I was a sophomore then. But I ran my buddy's Grand National. I ended up redeeming myself with the same people in the stand, so that felt pretty gratifying. But I'm glad I stayed with it. This weekend we had a great weekend in Tucson. Chris Forsythe, you know, I don't get to be on the opposite end of. I always seem to be when my mind's on racing on the promoter end, unless I'm at New Media, which I have a great time there. But I was able to race with Kyle. If you would have told me 3 months ago I'd be able to race with him when he got diagnosed with cancer, serious cancer, I would, you know, to say we were going to stand in a winner's circle together, him, I, and Justin Lamb, I would have said you're crazy. But so it was a really special weekend. I drove a Phil Unruh's Cobalt, very unconventional setup, high gear only, and a heavy car. It had a mini blower on it, on alcohol, high gear only. So when Kyle called me and said, what do you want to drive? I said, yeah, I'll do it. Well, how good you think it's going to be? I mean, I don't get out much. I like to be competitive, you know? And he said, well, it's either going to be really, really great, or it's going to be all over the map because it's just really unconventional. Well, I could tell you guys, we hit on something, because I would take that car to any big buck bracket race, to 60 foots, the whole thing. It was just repeating like a clock. It was awesome. So I did win a 10K there, and that was a blast, running dragsters and racing and winning with Kyle and Justin.
So I've got one last question before we let you go here, and it's a question that gets brought up all the time, and I know you're probably sick and tired of hearing it, but your name's also in this hat. Who's the greatest bracket racer to ever live?
Greatest bracket racer to ever live. You know, that is, I do see that come up. It seems like every 2 years there's a buzz about that, and it comes up, and there's some people arguing on the internet about that. You know, I think there's a lot of good arguments that could be made based on where you come from. So everyone has a valid point. So if you grew up in Bradenton, and if you're just from a bystander point of view, and you grew up in Bradenton and you watched the Williams brothers, you're going to say the Williams brothers. If you grew up in Texas, you're going to say guys like the Richardsons, Luke Bogacki. If you grew up in the Northeast, you might mention guys like the Biondos or the Fletchers. If you grew up in California, Disciples. So I think a lot of the controversy on that comes from people seeing something that they don't think is, you know, that is very rare, the way people race, how much they win. So it's a really good topic, and there's a really – everybody has a valid point, and when they say it's this guy or that guy or this guy or that guy, because usually it's the guys that saw it firsthand. So the guys in the Northeast might think I'm the best. The guys in the Southeast might think Williams are the best, and so on and so on. To answer your question, I'll put it this way. If I'm in the final of a huge event, who would I least likely to see in the other lane right now at this stage? And we're talking Topo, is that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, a case can definitely be made for LaBoose. The guy, I don't think anyone tries harder than him. Williams brothers, I mean, they're awesome. Scotty's really, really tough, without a doubt, and he can definitely be mentioned there. Bertozzi, I mean, now you got guys like Kevin Brannon. You got younger generations, Corey Galletti. Unbelievable, some of the runs he puts up and how aggressive he drives and wins. But the one guy I'm going to say is, Jag also, but I'm going to say Luke. That's my pick. I'm going to say Luke, and then he's my pick because he races for the win light. I think some of the mistakes some people can make sometimes is they race with their ego a little bit. I'm not just picking you know, I'm not picking one person out here, but Luke races for the wind light. He doesn't race with his ego. He's not afraid to hold it down to turn a wind light on. He's not afraid to hold three if the situation calls for it, but he races to turn a wind light on and not with his ego. And he's very, very disciplined and a great student of the sport and puts more effort into it. So all of those things combined, I'm going to say, he's my pick right now. Top bulb.
Yeah, that's a very solid pick. And I don't know if we're ever going to see a guy like Underwood have a year like he did last year. I mean, how incredible was that?
Yeah, Underwood, I mean, God, talk about a guy that doesn't age. I mean, I've watched him and Moroso kicking butt. So, yeah, he's definitely up there, too. I mean, I could go on and mention 10 more people. But, yeah, Underwood's up there, too. But if you made me pick just one right now, and there's no big gaps here. But I have a lot of respect for Luke, and he'd be the one that, out of all the people I mentioned, if you said you're going to race for $1 million right now and it's winner take all, who would you least likely have in the other lane? And that would be my answer.
Yeah.
I'd say that's hard to argue with for sure. I think it speaks to the competitive nature of it, the fact that that's a hard question to answer. Part of why we all love it is, you know, this, especially in top bulb, I think in all of bracket racing, just comes down to people can get hot, you know, different good drivers can get hot at different times. And then we think, okay, well, they had a hot streak, and then their name gets mentioned as, you know, depending on how long that goes, as the best ever. If I had to answer that question right now, I would probably say Kenny Underwood, just based on last year. But so in your opinion, though, and I know that you're an extremely accomplished bottom bulb racer, what about bottom bulb best racer in your opinion?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm really intrigued by that, because I've watched Kevin Pollard. Mm-hmm. I've watched Nick Hastings.
I watched Kevin Pollard this last weekend put 5 total in the other lane.
Zach was 8 take 8.
I was 8 take 8, just wasting my time.
And was he foot breaking?
Yes.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
2 rounds later, second round, he had a 3 package.
Yep, I was going to ask you how many times you did it in a row. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, Kevin Pollard, I watched him at Galat. So Galat last year, we opened it up to bottom bulb, and we tried it, and we didn't get much response. So we didn't do it again the following year. But Hastings was there. Pollard was there. Seth Phillips deserves mention, but here's the 4 people that I would like to see mix it up in the ring, and they come from different how do you say this? They're in different ball fields, so to speak. So you got Kevin Pollard, unbelievable. You got Nick Hastings. I watched them I walked out in the staging lanes, and I told them both after 3 days. I said, you know, I consider myself a really good bottom bulb racer, especially when I really focus on the back of my time, and I was really focused on bottom bulb only. But you guys, I'm not sure I'm able to put numbers what I'm watching here. I mean, those guys were going 002, 001, 002 back to back, you know, swapping feet. So very impressive. But so you got those 2 guys. Then you look on the NHRA side, which is a little bit of a different animal, because the runs are spaced out. So you might make one run at 8 in the morning, and you might make your next round might not be until, you know, maybe even 8 o'clock the following night. So you don't get in the chance to get into a groove like you do at a bracket race where you're running back to back to back. So the numbers might seem a little bit weaker, but Fletcher and especially right now, Justin Lamb, holy moly, those 2 guys, I would love to see, you know, that would be my argument. Okay. You got Nick Hastings, Kevin Pollard, you got Fletcher and Lamb. They race different, you know, one's racing NHRA where the runs are spread out. One's racing bracket racing where they're running back to back. I would like them to all switch cars and run for a season. That's the only way we'll find out. Mm-hmm. But right now, I mean, I talk about, you know, whoever you get to see, that's who you probably have the most respect for, because you see it firsthand. Fletcher, I mean, he has nothing to prove to anybody, but Lamb lately, I mean, the numbers he's putting up at these races is really hard to argue.
And I think if you take a guy like Seipel and 30 years ago, move him to this side of the country with us, he would be right there with you and Luke and Scotty in that argument. And I think that's just a staple of where we live. And, you know, there's a reason that the Fling is a huge hit, not only because it's your event in Vegas, but that's the only event like that around there. And, you know, I think you take Kyle and put him in one of these environments where you can race for $10,000-$20,000 every weekend if you just drive 4 or 5 hours. I think that would have a whole different outcome. And, you know, he's got hundreds of wins already. You take that and you triple it at least.
Yeah, I'd agree. Absolutely. I've watched Kyle firsthand and what he's capable of. And case in point, Chicago last year, hops into that car, his 30 degree weather swings in the national event. And I mean, he's got all of his bases covered. When he is on, he is as good as Luke or anybody.
Except for electric shifter failure. I saw that thing nose over and I about puked for him.
Yeah. 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 I remember that.
But
yeah, Kyle's tough. He really is. And what about, you know, then you start thinking about the next generation. Who's going to bump all of us out? You know, is Corey Galletti? I mean, these guys are young. They're way ahead of what I was when I was their age.
Gage Birch.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Absolutely. Exactly. Jake, bottom bulb, Gage Birch is tearing it up.
No, bottom top, open comp, pro tree, it doesn't matter. You know, he goes to all these NMCA races and stuff in Bradenton and Orlando, and he's in 2 or 3 finals a weekend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he totally dominates for sure. It's definitely going to be interesting as the years progress.
Yep. Well, Peter, man, it's been great. We've kept you on here for almost an hour and a half, so we'll let you get off here and spend time with the wife. And, you know, we appreciate you coming on. And it was, I think it was every bit of what we hoped and expected. And congratulations on the sellouts and the business. And we hope to see you at a few more bracket races this year, like not in the other lane, preferably, but let somebody else take you out.
Yeah, well, I definitely appreciate the opportunity to be on, and I hope to be out there mixing it up as well, guys.
Yep, it was an honor, Peter. I have to say one thing before we go off the air with you. I mean, this is part of what, you know, when Jake and I started this podcast and I approached him about this, and, you know, we kind of were trying to figure this out and where we're going to go and what we're going to do. This was exactly the idea I had, was being able to talk to, bounce questions off of, you know, somebody as accomplished as yourself. So I want to say it's been a real honor having you on the show. Wish you the best of luck, sir. And, you know, look us up. We hope to see you at a bracket race sometime this season.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys keep up the good work. I'm going to start listening more to your podcast. It sounds pretty interesting. I was going through them today after Jake texted me, and looks like you had a lot of good episodes so far. So I'm definitely going to stay in tune. Very cool.
One thing that I did miss that I wanted to ask earlier, where did the name Terminator come from?
Terminator. All right. So the Terminator came from English town. I was about 19 years old, came from Lewis Bloom, you know, the stat man.
Oh, yeah.
With NHR right now. So he was the announcer at Raceway Park. And I was not a kid of many words. I was 19 years old and I would walk around and I would win a lot of races back then on the local level, but I just wouldn't talk much. So one time I was walking around the burnout box to watch my brother, and there was an oil down, and it got silent, and I had, you know, I was a punk. I was from Queens, New York. I had a cutoff shirt, and I used to work out back then. And he just said it. He goes, and look who's standing on the starting line. You know, he kind of resembles the Terminator, and he just started it right then and there. And and, you know, obviously it was more from winning races, because I look nothing like the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, that's for sure. But it was Lewis Bloom in about, I'm going to say, about 1991.
Oh, I was -2. All right. Well, we'll let you go this time. So
yeah.
Thanks, Pete, and have a good night, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, Jake, how's it going?
The Terminator. It's going great, man. I'm kind of still jet lagged, and we got in like midnight last night, and I went to work this morning, and and we fly out again Thursday. So, well, I do. I got to leave Jenna behind for this one, but it's going great. We had a great time at March Meet. Saw some incredible runs and a new Top Fuel world record for I guess the nostalgia Top Fuel. A lot of drama at the March Meet. A lot of awesome race cars. A lot of Volkswagen Beetles going across. Quarter mile, just approximately 1,100 feet further than they were supposed to go under full power. But it was a great time, and I had a great time with the Motor Mania crew, which they went under Jay Angel whenever they're doing anything that's pay-per-view and stuff like that. But Mark and Joanne worked their tails off to produce a great live stream event, and you know, it was a great time. I can't wait to go back to what they call the patch.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, the March Meet. I mean, all the lore and stories that have been told over the years about that, and very cool that you were able to be a part of it.
And I met Roland Leon. I just got to point that out. And it
that's
was
amazing.
Everything that you would ever think of.
That's awesome. Yeah, cool. Definitely cool opportunity. Glad you guys were able to go do that. I got to drive to South Carolina.
Yeah, you actually got to go to the beach.
Yeah, got to go to Myrtle Beach.
And the least fuel efficient vehicle you own.
That's
other
right.
Than your race car.
Yeah, very true. All in all, I can't complain. I mean, it is what it is. You can only do so much with what the cards that Mother Nature deals you. I mean, it wasn't that they didn't try to race, because they absolutely did. You know, Friday, everything was rolling good, and it's just the rain set in, and it actually went against the forecast that was out there. The rain wasn't supposed to get there till Sunday later. There were chances, but not that great, and man, it just hit and stuck around on Saturday. But we made the best of it. You know, I mean, on Friday, I won the get slapped with 5 total by Kevin Pollard, my first round of SFG competition, and I'm 8-8, which I was quite proud of personally, because I came off of a one time trial of going on my first pass of the year. I was 43 up front, so I'm just happy that I was able to turn that to an 8 the next round, despite what, you know, Kevin just saying, hi, welcome to SFG, here's a 5 package. So not a whole lot I could do with that round. You know, at least I won the reentry round. I was 9 on the tree then. Got my second round against a friend of the podcast, guy that listens, I know, Chris Todd. We raced second round. I just asked him what happened before we got on here earlier, because he lost power, and he said he's still not sure yet. But it didn't sound like anything major. That's what I was trying to convey to him, as I hated to take it that way. Was shaping up to be a good race. I'm very pleased with the car. Sebert Performance carburetor performed amazing. I think it picked me up. I don't know. I would say I'm going to go with a conservative, say that it picked me up 500ths off what the car would have ran last year in the same trim. So, and was just perfect. I mean, from right out of the box, throttle response is amazing. Car ran really good. I mean, I gotta say, I mean, I came away from it with a 2-1 round record. So at least I started off the year on a winning round record, and I know that my car will go from point A to point B. So hopefully that keeps happening. And we will get after it again this weekend. Plan is to go to Bowling Green and run the 10G at BG, going on this weekend. $105 gets you a tech card. So I know a lot of guys around here will be going, even though it looks like the weather's going to be cold, but it looks dry. So I'll take that. And we'll see how it all shakes down. What are your plans this weekend?
Yeah, heading out to Ennis, to Motorplex, to announce the Texas Triple Tens for Cody Polage. And I've never been to a racetrack in Texas. I was in Dallas for about 6 hours during my layover yesterday, but kind of excited to get out there and just kind of work for once. And I don't know, it's going to feel weird to just have one job to do, but it should be pretty neat. They're going to do a practice tier race Thursday night, so I'm going to play around a little bit then, but I think it'll be a good weekend. And I think that from what I can tell, the consensus is going to be great, and you can pay David Bird Jones to pressure wash your rig while you're there. So, I mean, how much better does it get?
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the Gators are coming up too, so I'll probably flip them back.
What's the going rate for a David Byrne Jones wash?
I don't know. I'm not sure, but it's worth it. I mean, the guy doesn't need a ladder. He'll clean the top of your motorhome from the ground. He's only like 9'11".
Awesome. And this weekend are the for the Sportsman NHRA Racers, Gator Nationals, coming up this weekend. So I know a lot of guys. I saw a rig, I think, when I was coming back on, I think I saw it on Sunday night already headed south. So I know a lot of people are headed down there ready for the Gator Nationals this weekend. And with that, let's go into the results portion of the show with the Baby Gators, Gainesville Raceway this weekend. Let's see. Jake, you want to start us out with a little comp eliminator?
Yeah, competition eliminator, Van Puckett, the Georgia-based Cavalier, got the win over Frank Aragona. Frank was in his Econo dragster, and Van got the win light in competition eliminator and super stock. Tyler Kahili from Rock Springs, Georgia, got the win over Irvin Johns, an Indiana native here to us, Zach, and turned it red in the final round. It happens, part of it. Stock eliminator, Jim Wall from Florida, and a Roadrunner beat Mike McMahon, another Florida native. Speaking of, I guess he's not a Florida native anymore, but Ray Miller III, Spring City, Tennessee, got the super comp win. He was 7 thou under, excuse me, and Woody Adcock was 10 thou under. So a pretty exciting super comp final round there. Ray Miller's a guy that just keeps doing it, and he keeps doing it, and he keeps doing it, and it's quite impressive the level that he competes on. But another guy got his first win in super gas. Cole Cummings, the Cummings family out of Louisiana, he finally got the win in the Chevy 2. He was 3 thou under in the final, and Travis Giddens, he was just a little more under, another double breakout final round.
Yep, and so that'll take us to Super Street. We saw Jimmy Daniel out of Montgomery, Alabama, racing into 63 Tempest, taking the win over Jeffrey Wheats. Looks like Wheats broke out a little bit there, so Jimmy Daniel taking the win. Top dragster Ross Laris out of Louisiana took the win at 6:14 at 2:19 and defeated Mark Gerliasio, excuse me, I believe that's correct, out of Florida. Took the runner-up spot in top dragster. Top sportsman Derek Brown out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, took the win in his S10 over Kurt Frederick, who took the tow down to Gainesville from Burlington, Wisconsin, to race his 68 Camaro. So,
hey, this junior dragster final, let me hop on this, because it's my good friend AA Ron Reynolds picked up the win in a junior dragster. That's Rob Reynolds' son, RT Promotions. Mm-hmm. You know, great family, and the kid is going to be something special. And if, mark my words, he will be right up there with the Glittys and the Gage Birches and the Cameron Fredericksons, all those kids, because AA Ron can straight hit the bottom in a junior dragster. And he picked the win up over Brandon Miller, who drove down from Canterbury, Connecticut. So actually, Gainesville's a somewhat local race for Aaron and the Reynolds family. So Rob owns Space Coast Speed and Custom. Go give them a shout out. And a big shout out to AA Ron. Pick out the win at junior dragster at the Baby Gators.
Yeah. So, and also they had an intermediate junior dragster class. Winner was Jada Sexton out of Georgia, and defeated Allison Reynolds from Florida.
AA Ron's sister. Yep.
There you go. Reynolds family dominating. Two finals for them. So that's awesome. Novice junior dragster saw Nolan Callahan out of North Carolina take the win over Kylan Bader, the Florida car. So looks like a great event. I guess what stands out for me is kind of going over Cole Cummins getting his first super gas win. So way to go, Cole. Sure, a lot more of those to come in his future. So congratulations, shout out to that team.
Yeah, that takes us to Chris Forsyth and Sean Langdon's event down there in Tucson, the K&N Southwest Showdown, mm-hmm. where Friday, the Super Pro main event, Marco Paravalaris picked up the big $10,000 win over the local Chuck Hawk. And in the pro category, Tibor Kedar. That's what I'm going to say that. Tibor Kedar. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. I'm sure I'm wrong. I'm sorry, Tibor, or however you pronounce it if I'm wrong. But it's all right. We're announcing it for a good thing. He takes the pro main event win, being 10 total in the final round over Kaleem Menzel. At the Friday portion of the Southwest Showdown.
10 total off the bottom. Nasty, nasty stuff. Saturday, Hughes Performance main event. Our illustrious guest was the Super Pro $10,000 winner, Peter Biondo himself. He was running in Phil Unruh's Cobalt, and he defeated
the Terminator.
He defeated Gabe Torres in the final round of Top Bulb in Pro. They were running for $4,500. The winner was Tony Marconi. And very interesting final round here, because in winning that, he picked up the Specialty Fastener Bounty Award, which was some extra money. I think it was $500 for defeating Friday's winner, Tibor Kedar, in the final. So shout out Tibor for making two finals in a row, and shout out for Tony for getting it done in the final and taking that bounty award. So also Saturday, contested was a Pro 64 shootout. $10,000 to win from Duran Racing Product. So, and this brings us, if you guys haven't seen it, look it up. It is on the, I believe it's on the Southwest Showdown Facebook page. Peter Biondo took the win. He was 6-red in the final. The other car was had a green light. And then after that, things went just kind of crazy. He forgot to secure his fuel cell cap. I think we've all done it. No shame there. It'll probably be a long time before Luis Valenzuela does it again. And there's a lot of ways to lose in a bracket race. So fuel gets under the tires, turns the car to the hard left, and he crossed center line and hands the win back to the Terminator himself. So crazy final there. Peter Biondo takes the win, being 6-red. Did you get to see the video?
I haven't.
It is good stuff, man. You have to take it out. You have to check it out for sure. And then to finish up the results there, 64 car kid performance, 20K shootout, Chris Whitfield. I saw him trying to figure out how to get to the racetrack. Stacker was having some trouble, needed some wheel spacers. And so shout out to whoever got Chris Whitfield back on the road. That's awesome. And he got there and made it pay off. I think when I read the story about it. He was dialed 466, I think, every lap of the shootout, and he took the win over Logan War in the final.
Well, knowing Chris Whitfield, that thing would probably be able to go 53 if he held it wide open. Not saying he's got a bad race car. He's just a bad dude behind the wheel of it.
Yep. Yeah. Total compliment there to Chris Whitfield. Yep. Bad dude. And congratulations on the big win.
Yep. That rolls into the other big event over the weekend that kind of just got a washed out, like you said earlier. The FTI SFG Promotions Powerball of Bracket Racing, which I heard it called the Super Bowl and a few other things over the weekend, but it was the Powerball this weekend, right?
Yes. Powerball this weekend. Super Bowl is the one coming up in Rockingham.
Oh, okay. Kevin Brannon, KB, showing you that the off-season practice tree challenge does work. And I would say I was pulling for my buddy Fred at Four Cars, and I know he put a pretty good package on KB in his other entry earlier, but KB, he's just a bad dude, and he's the guy that can shake that good loss, I guess what you could say would be a good loss whenever you lay down a really good run and just get beat. He shook it off to pick up the win over Jeff Serra. Jeff is a bad dude, and he was driving Witherow's Camaro down to, remarkably, like he always does, and that's our Emotion Solution sponsor right there.
Yeah, yep, and we drove Thursday and got there kind of near as pretty close to the end of the rounds. I ended up watching the final on my phone in the hotel room. But KB was laying down some nasty laps. And Friday, just rained out. I mean, there's nothing there. After we got through the first round of reentry, decision was made to all the remaining competitors because they didn't quite get done with the second round, which I wish they would have because we would have won. That probably would have, would have doubled. But we ended up getting $430. Can't argue with that. It is what it is. Saturday, it just rained in the morning. Everything was really wet. It just kept, little sprinkles kept happening enough to keep everything wet. There was no way it was getting dry. So got there Sunday and thought, man, we're going to race today. I mean, the sun was out. It was, I think, a high ended up hitting like 78 degrees. But the problem was, man, it just pulled the water up through the track, and the big strips of rubber were pulling up off the track, and it's just track conditions were unsafe. So shout out to SFG for, I think, making the right call. Track wasn't going to come around. Interest of safety first. You can't go down a racetrack where there's water coming up out of it. So they gave everybody $600 credit to a future SFG event. And if I add it all up together, I made money on the weekend. So how many times can you go to a racetrack and say that? Not many. So I'm going to be
quite a few
for
me if I'm working.
I'm going to be happy with we got to go to the beach and got some credit to help pay off future events. So it is what it is. Wish it could have went better for him, but the weather just didn't agree.
Yep, I understand that. And so that we were trying to think of something to talk about for Emotion Solutions final round, and the credit thing could go either way, and I've seen it all over Facebook both ways. I don't really care one way or the other. I don't have a dog in the fight, but your opinion was you came out ahead that way, and that's completely okay. But for the people that didn't make it in the split for the $432.50 or whatever that was, or the $430, and I don't know, there was a lot of people upset, but a lot of people at the same time were okay with it. So I don't know that I've ever seen it happen before, but it happened.
Yeah.
I understand why it happened, but I'm not sure I agree with the principle of why it happened. But
yeah,
and the problem I have is, I'm sure it's going to come off wrong, but all I saw all week on Facebook was the weather's great. You got time to get here. The weather's great. You got time to get here. So say I'm the guy that's on the fence and say, all right, he's going to do everything he can to get this thing in. I'm surely. So I go and pay my entry fee and you got a credit. That's, I feel like that's where I would have an issue, but it is what it is. And I'm sure that if there was enough argument made, you could get your money back. That's part of it. I've never known Kyle personally to keep any money from anybody, especially if it's owed to them. So I don't know, it's just it's a different tactic, and it kind of caught a lot of people off guard, I think.
I think it's a nature of the business. I mean, I can definitely say I appreciate SFG for giving bracket racers the chance to run for life-changing money. So in my opinion, we need them around to keep the purses up. And I'm already entered in the Michigan 500K race. I had $500 left to pay on it, in full disclosure. So my $600 credit went straight into that. So now, hey, I'm paid off. I got $100 to spend at the gate when I get to Michigan to get in the 50s or the 20 and the 250s or whatever they're doing. So I just count it as a cash that was going to come out of my bank account anyway. So, but everybody's got different situations. We waited in line to get in at the end to figure out finances for, it was a while, I know, but I give them credit. I mean, they were really taking care of everybody and making sure that all the numbers shook down right. It wasn't like a, you know, here you go, you know, and take off kind of a thing. You know, they took the time to speak to everybody and make sure they got it all right. So I commend them for that. And it was a tough situation to be put in, and on the side of like somebody that can't go to any more SFG races this year. That's the only one that you could go to, but you went to it, you know, you showed your support, you rolled in the gate, you gave the money. Then, you know, I can't speak for any personal situations or what decisions that were made, but if that truly was the case, then I would hope that that some money got returned. I know, I think for the single day entries, I may be talking out of turn, but I believe for like single day entries that was the case. You know, it was just for people that entered the whole weekend on the credit type deal. So it is what it is. Like I said, it worked out pretty good for me. Long drive, but it is what it is. You know, I'm not upset about it. Got to spend time with my wife and cruise down the highway and try to go drag race. So it's to try to keep a positive outlook about stuff and just keep rolling forward. So it was a tough spot, a tough business decision. I don't think that's probably the reason I don't want to ever try to put on a race, but it is what it is. And I can see both sides of it, but for me, it worked out pretty good.
Yeah. And you know, while we're on that topic of that race, I've got a few things that I want to say that I've kind of said in a Facebook post. I respect everybody's opinions. I think it's awesome that people want to support me and whatever. That's awesome. But please don't be making Facebook posts dragging me into it. You know, I have a lot of respect for a lot of people, and you know, I appreciate everything that all the kind words people have spoke. And I'm not saying I agree or disagree with anything that's being said, but you know, that company made a decision, and that's it. It's just like it's life. It's part of it. I listened to a little bit of it, and you know, it is what it is. And that's, unfortunately, that's something that they're going to have to deal with and take care of internally. And I don't have to do anything about it anymore. That's the greatest part.
Yeah, that's right. It's definitely not your problem.
Yeah. And you know, and not that I ever had a problem with taking care of issues like that. I enjoy it thoroughly. But to say that I was sitting on the starting line at March meet regretting my where I'm at would be a lie. You know, I love what I do, and I love all the opportunities that I have coming up, and I make the best of it. You know, I don't need that job, and I got a lot of experience from it. It's not a secret. You know, I learned a lot. I learned, you know, how to carry yourself and how to not carry yourself by observing peers there. You know, it's just a I don't know. I'm happy where I'm at, and I everybody, you're awesome for supporting me, and we're gonna be on the mic for the Texas Triple Tens this weekend. So maybe we can get some Facebook Live going on or something. But that's where we'll be, and we'll be on the microphone for the NHRA national event here in just a few weeks. So get out your one day purchase cards on your NHRA TV app and we'll get after it. It'll be worth money
for sure.
The show or be the show.
Yeah, that's right. And I saw the post about your announcing, and I think that you're right, you know, in the fact that I think what to take away from that is that, man, you know, you relate to people, you did a great job, and you know, that's why people appreciate, you know, what you do on the microphone at the, you know, with your announcing. And obviously to you, I mean, that you've hit on something, and that's a good thing. So yeah, for sure. And you got plenty of opportunities ahead, and it is, you know, it just is what it is. This weekend, man, hopefully everything goes good for you guys down in Texas. I hope the weather's good. And I said, it looks up here that we're going to be cold, but it looks like we got a chance to get it in. So it looked like the, you know, people were testing and tuning at Bowling Green last weekend, and the track was looking good. So hoping for some racing this weekend. I'm just going to go for Saturday and Sunday, just to work obligations on Friday and save my days for these other huge events that are coming up. So yeah, going to be another crazy good weekend of drag racing across the country. I'm sure lots of events are going on. And I got to tell you, it was a relief to do an episode again where there was racing to talk about. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, yeah. And there was, if you don't get your fill of racing from this episode, I don't think you're going to, because you've got, you know, undoubtedly what one of the best promoter minds this day and age. Him and Kyle Seipel are incredible together. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. In stories that go way back, you wouldn't think that Peter Biondo's 47 years old, because he looks like he's about 29, but he still drives like he's 29, and he still performs like that, and he carries himself that way. So Yeah, if you don't get your fill of racing through this episode, then you're out of luck.
Yep, and I appreciate everybody. And, you know, once again, hit us up. You want a set of decals, we'll make sure that we get them out to you. You know, say hi to us. I got a lot of positive feedback at the SFG race. That's another thing I hadn't told you yet, Jake. You know, met a lot of people. You know, had a lot of people come up and shake my hand and said, hey, you know, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. It sounds really good. We like listening to the episode. So, great. I was so happy to hear that and so appreciative of all of you that have been listening and supporting Dialed In. So keep it up, like and share. We appreciate y'all, and we will see you in the staging lanes. Good luck.